I would tell people if they were starting a business, if you don't love it, don't do it. Hey, welcome to another edition of Do Hard Stuff. And I got my friend Gary Salmon with Black Talent Security. How are you, Gary?
What's going on, JW? I'm doing great.
Man, we only see each other about four times a month, and this one's going to be five.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hey, I'm just going to jump right in this. You know, you and I, we do a lot of stuff together, some events together. We're a client of yours, so we've got a lot of things that we do together. But I think, first of all, you know, I always get intrigued because when I meet other entrepreneurs, other business owners, the concept always seems to be that this whole starting a business and just, you know, putting a shingle on the door, as they might say, or just, hey, to start a business, all I have to do is file me for a company name, get me a checking account, and boom, I'm in the money. But the statistics are clear. One out of seven businesses make it past the first year. That number continues to dwindle down. So how was it for you? Was it easy peasy?
I mean, with the current venture, look, I think it's like a lot of other companies I've started. I mean, I've been a serial entrepreneur since I was 10 years old. I mean, I did everything from like lawn mowing business to like snow plowing, to marketing, believe it or not, as a kid. I was printing stuff out for various, you know, towns and doing flyers. And then even into college when I started my first company, practice management software. Look, it's an unbelievable amount of hard work. I think people don't realize, you know, it's 7 days a week. You know, 12, 14, sometimes 16-hour days, just crushing it. You know, and if I look at my first company, you know, my grandma gave me $5,000. She's like, go buy a computer and a printer. And I turned that into a multi-million-dollar business many years later. But it was, you know, giving up lots of things. I mean, I gave up some stuff in college because I was building the company in college. You know, after college, I got to the point where I'm like, oh, my God, I've probably put, like, thousands of hours of work into this thing, writing software and trying to make this company go, and I have no money in my bank account, right? And by the age of 29, I sell the company, and at 29 years of age, I'm a multimillionaire. And, you know, it's all worth it, but it's a tremendous sacrifice, but the reward is unbelievable. Like, I literally, and you do the same thing, JW, we both talked about this, like, I wake up every day, and I absolutely love what I do, period. You know, I tell my wife, I'm like, start my day at 6:37. The next thing I turn around and it's dinner time. You know, and it's just because, you know, I'm passionate about it. I love it. I love my employees. I love taking care of customers. And, you know, I'm in a highly technical space with cybersecurity, and every day is a new challenge that, you know, we have to overcome. So, you know, from a problem solving perspective, it's great. But yeah, look, any startup for the most part, it's rough. I mean, it was definitely rough for us for the first year. Like, hey, we just got a check in. We can now make payroll for the week. You know, it's like, all right, when's the next check coming in for next week's payroll? You know, so it was a struggle. But, you know, I had some great people that we started this company with, and that made it a lot easier. All seasoned, you know, professionals, and we all knew what we were getting into. Right, this wasn't, you know, a bunch of, you know, young folks who had no business experience trying to get something set up. So, you know, we made it work, and you know, now it's doing great. We're excited to see where we are and, you know, where we're going in the future. So yeah, look, I think any startup is challenging. And, you know, I remember my most interesting story was 21 years of age, got out of college. I was at my my best friend's house, and her mom was like, oh, what are you doing after college? I'm like, oh, I already started a company in college, you know, I'm selling software to the dental space. And I was like, I'm an entrepreneur. She's like, yeah, a lot of people say that. It's probably not going to work out. I was like, what? You know, and, you know, I took that, and that story has, like, never left my brain, because it was literally a shot in my gut. Like, you're working hard, and you're going to get nowhere. But this was a family who, you know, worked for General Motors for their whole life, and they were just like, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. And they didn't understand the concept of, you know, kind of the American dream and building your own business. Like, everyone has their own thing. There are some people that just aren't wired to do startups and new companies, and they enjoy working corporate. And I've done that too, and I enjoyed that, and I learned a lot there, you know, as well.
So. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I literally just had a conversation with my wife this last week, and I was kind of apologizing. I've been married 31 years, right? Coming on 31. And I was kind of apologizing to my wife. I was like, man, I know, we're just in this hyper growth mode and I'm having to work a lot of hours and I'm sorry. Oh, I know what it was. I was leaving. I'm in Costa Rica now. I got to leave for a week, like next week or right after we got here. I'm like, man, I got to be gone for a week. I thought I was going to be gone for 3 days. I had two more meetings piled on. And she literally said, you know what? I'd be upset if I knew you didn't love what you do. And I was like, almost brought a little tear, I was like, okay. And I thought, it's so true though, because I don't mind 14-hour days. Sometimes I can be at my desk and the only time I got up to pee and get something to eat the whole day, right? And literally, I'm okay with that. It's because I'm passionate about solving problems for people, as you are. And I'm passionate about working with people. So I would tell people if they were starting a business, if you don't love it, don't do it, because you will hate life. Because instead of doing something for 7 or 8 hours a day that you don't like, you're doing something for 12, 14, 15 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week. So you're going to hate it twice as much because you're working twice as hard. And yeah, interesting. You made the comment about the people that said, oh yeah, good luck with that. People very, very really, I think there's people who would like to be in business for themselves and think that if you're in business for yourself, you take, 8 days off every week. You only work 2 hours a day. You're always, at a beach. Sometimes I'm in here in Costa Rica. I'm like, I haven't left the house in 5 days, and you just don't realize that it's still work, right? And the other thing is being undercapitalized. I think that can be a problem, and I think it can also be the best place to jump off, because if you've got a boatload of money, then there's no downside, right? If somebody said, hey, Gary, you can start Black Talent Security. Here's $1 million. You do what you need to do and just run through that as fast as you want. Just build a business versus, hey, Gary, here's $2,500. Here, max out these 3 credit cards. Here's a free used computer. Good luck. You're like, okay, I got to make this work, right? So, I tend to believe that being undercapitalized can teach you a lot of lessons about how to do things right as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it teaches you a tremendous lesson. How to manage money, resources, maybe how to build things that are more cost effective. Or in a more cost-effective way. I mean, there's a lot of really good life lessons that, you take that with you for the rest of your life, whatever business you're doing. And I agree with you. It's very easy just to take money and throw money and be like, oh, this is going to work. There's no plan behind it. There's no real thought. Yeah, and the outcome is probably not what you're going to get. You said it. Majority of businesses fail. And I think a lot of times it comes down to managing your money and getting the right people into the business and having a plan and executing on the plan. And I think people also struggle with adaptability. You have a plan and then it doesn't work. You're like, no, we're sticking to the plan, right? I'm like, all right, look.
It's a bad plan, but okay.
Okay, go for it. Learn how that works out, right? But I think, and especially the more and more of these you do. I mean, I've done a couple startups that didn't work. I'll admit it.
I've failed more times than I've been successful, I promise you. Yeah.
But you know what? Everyone's a learning experience.
Everyone.
You pick yourself up, right? And you're like, I'll do better next time. And these are the lessons that I learned.
You know what's interesting, though, Gary? I've asked this question, 50 times to entrepreneurs over the last 20 years. And I'll always say, well, hey, tell me how you got started or how'd you get into what you're doing? And there's not one of them goes, it was so easy, man. I just opened up a bank account and got started, hired this one dude, and man, we just took off. And I've literally never heard that, right? Not one single time did anybody ever tell me that. So I think having these expectations, if you're coming out of college or high school or whatever, and you're kind of thinking about doing it, or if you're a seasoned, you mentioned that you were with a big corporation, very large corporation for a number of years. And quitting those jobs is not easy, right? You're making 6 figures. You got all these benefits. You pretty much kind of set your own schedule. So I think for people to make that jump, into an entrepreneur. It's fun. Don't it's challenging. It's invigorating. I mean, I get a thrill every single day. But I think most people aren't leaving. I'd say it's harder when you get older because to be working in a corporate environment where you've made good money, you got good benefits, it's steady, your check comes every single week. That'll be harder to leave, I would think.
It's comfortable. I look back 8 years ago when I told my wife of the idea I had, and to your point, I'm going to walk away from a good job. And we had a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old. I literally had, a battle of life with cancer that, I could have lost my life with. We just sold our house. We just moved into a new house. My mom was really sick. And I told my wife, yeah, I'm quitting and starting a new company. And she's like, what? And I'm like, and then I sat down, I'm like, we'll be okay. Like, we're okay. Even if I don't get paid for a year, in the worst case scenario, we'll be okay. And she's like, you know what? You've done it before. You'll do it again. And, I think having the support of your spouse, your significant
Oh,
other,
man.
if you're in that position, it has to be there, because if it's not, like, the family life can just be a disaster, And then now you're fighting the business life, the personal life, and it is a challenge. So, being able to support one another, I think, is really important as well. You know what? It worked out.
I'll comment on that because I think this is important. I always laugh about this. I tell this many times. I went completely bankrupt back in 1999, and I'm always sharing the story with people. It's funny, you can be around a table or at dinner or something, and people will be talking, and I might say, oh, yeah, I went bankrupt in 1999. Never, ever does not one person, either then or a little later, they whisper in your ear, hey, man, I went broke too. And you're just like, it's not a shame. It's part of your journey and part of what makes you better. But you mentioned about family support. When it happened to me, my son was 5 and my daughter was 3. I'd only been married about 7 years, 6 years, at 6.5 years at the time. And I'll never forget, I realized I had to tell my wife that we were completely broke, right? And I thought, I mean, I've got a wonderful, beautiful wife, and I thought, she's just gonna leave, right? When I tell her this, she's taking the kids, she's gonna go back to her mom's, she's gone. And you mentioned about the support of your family. I'll never forget. I finally broke down, told her, shaking, telling her, like we don't have any money. And I remember she just reached me, hugged me around the neck, and she goes, I'm not worried about it. I got you, we'll figure it out. And that was it. And I just remember going, okay, I married the right woman. I'm ready to roll,
Exactly. Never
And
look
it makes
back.
you fight harder also knowing that people are in your corner fighting for you too, right? It just makes a big difference. So
It makes a huge difference. Yeah, just one stressor gone.
what are you doing now? Tell us about Black Talent Security and how you got it. Maybe just why you got into this business as well.
Yeah, look, I've been in the technology field literally since college, as I alluded to, building practice management software for the oral maxillofacial surgery space. So I've been intimately involved with everything from owning an IT company to building software from the ground up, from Microsoft DOS to Windows to multiple evolutions. I was literally one of the very first companies in the world to deploy a cloud-based healthcare system in the late 90s. And the late 90s was really my first introduction to real cyber threats, like nothing like we have today, right? Conceptually, the hackers are breaking into these networks and taking control of your computers and using them to attack other networks. There's no such thing as ransomware. But when we deployed our cloud technology in 99, like I threw up a big red flag to my engineers. I'm like, guys, like we gotta think about security here, because at some point we're gonna have millions of records in these systems. So fast forward to 2002, we were crushing it, and we had thousands of users running our practice management software. And when you look at the size of these databases, we're like, man, if someone gets in this network, we're gonna have a major problem. So yeah, we invested in some really state-of-the-art Cisco technology at the time for our data center. And literally this technology tripped, locked out all of our users, it detected an attack and thwarted it. But yeah, we had a serious attempted intrusion into an environment. We worked with a government agency to figure it all out, and they ended up arresting a person.
Wow.
The attack. That was my wake-up call. And you know, in terms of, you know, a good call from a business leadership perspective, you didn't have that technology. Honestly, JW, no one had insurance back then. It was the Wild West. Like, I'll be done. You know, lost 12 years worth of work, gone, right? Just been out of existence. So, you know, then over the years, I just kind of kept up to date with security and what was going on. And then 2017, I started getting calls from lots of clients like, hey, we got hit with ransomware. We're down. We've been down for 2 weeks. We can't function. Our practice is dead. Well, what can you do? And like, I can't do much. I'm not in that business anymore. And then finally, I was just like, you know what? Someone's got to do something here. So got together with a couple of buddies that, you know, did security on Wall Street for Fortune 100 companies. And we're like, hey, guys, let's spin this thing up and start helping this healthcare community. Yeah, I went from an idea to being in practice in about 6 months. You know, we built up our security solution in about 6 months. So now we are providing dedicated cybersecurity to mostly the healthcare space, but we do have like banks and manufacturers and a whole bunch of other industries, but most of our clients are healthcare. And we're not an IT company, so we don't do IT. We're specialists. So we come into any size dental organization, whether they're a mom and pop practice with 10 computers, or we have some of the largest DSOs in the country with, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 computers. What we do is we come in and we assess risk. You know, every couple of hours, we're looking at the network. How are the hackers going to break in? Where are the weaknesses in the networks, in the computers, in the firewalls? We're evaluating that, presenting that data back to the IT company for the practice or the managed service provider for the DSOs and saying, hey guys, here are the problems we're detecting with your network, and here's what you need to do to harden your security to prevent an intrusion. So we manage about 55,000 computers just in
Wow.
dental, and we do everything from, you know, looking for vulnerabilities on the computers and firewalls to using AI to detect threats and malicious activity on a network to training employees so they don't call for social engineering scams, assessments. You know, we're doing a lot of like third-party assessments. So before a business or a healthcare org partners with someone like, you know, like your company, JW, you get this all the time. People are like, hey, JW, what are you doing for security? You know, and you have an answer for that. And this is becoming more and more important, you know, and we now have our own platform. We've literally built our own security platform in the cloud that now analyzes all of this data and presents the data back to the businesses so they can make, you know, risk-based decisions on how they better secure their environment. So we've had tremendous success. You know, we've never had one incident in years, and beating the odds by far, right? Because don't do
Yeah.
anything in the security field. Like, high likelihood if you're not doing the right things, if you're just working with an IT company, right, and not engaging in a cyber firm, like you're going to get hit. The odds are you're going to.
Well, I think that if you ask me, and again, we've got what, almost 1,300 computers. You're monitoring all those on a daily basis. I think when we started with you, we had a couple of hundred, maybe.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, I think it was maybe 160 or something. And so it is great when our clients, especially in the healthcare space, they ask us all the time, well, who do you use? And it's great because we're able to refer you. And they call you many times, say, oh, are they really using you? And find out, which I think spawns those conversations. But I think it's, and you mentioned on it, but to me, it's really big to help understand you're not an IT company. You're not setting up computers. You're not integrating PMS software into the cloud or helping them do conversions. None of that. You're specialized in that you're being specialized with cybersecurity. To me, I would probably liken it that you know, I'll go to my GP doctor and go in for a regular checkup, and they says, "Well, you need brain surgery." I said, "Oh, well, doc, you can do it. Just why don't you just go ahead and do that? You know, you're a doctor. It's okay." It's to me, it's very similar, and I think that maybe that's an analogy just came to me today. But I was like, it's very similar because I might just say, "Oh, yeah, my IT company. Yeah, oh, yeah. Would you handle my cybersecurity for me? I'd appreciate that." And they're like, "Yeah, sure. You know what? Pay me another $38 a month. I'll load some software on there, and off we go." Right? And that's, to me, that is like getting out on a log in the middle of the water. You might be able to spin that for a little bit, but eventually you're going to fall in the water,
It's
I think
going
for
to.
sure.
So that's a great analogy, and that's precisely the problem, right? If you look back, One of the things we do is preventative services, but the other thing we do, unfortunately, is incident response, where we get contacted by dental practices, DSOs that have been victims of ransomware. And when you go back and you look at the root cause, it always comes back to one thing. They didn't have the right people protecting the network. And to your point, like, IT companies are so important and so critical, but that's not what they specialize in. We do this literally 24/7, 365 days a year. IT companies, they're reacting to something bad that's happening. I mean, that's the reality of it. That's their modus operandi. You know, our thought and process revolves around, how do we prevent someone from getting into your network? What IT companies do is like, oh, well, we have some antivirus software, so if someone gets into your network, the antivirus software is going to stop it until it doesn't. Every single ransomware case, you know, the business has antivirus software, they have firewalls, and the business owners, the doctors, like, we were told we were protected. Like, we don't understand this. How did they get past our firewall? I'm like, do you not think, like, multi-billion dollar companies that get hit with ransomware don't have a firewall, right? I mean, it's the same concept. So, yeah, the whole concept of specialization, having trained security engineers, you know, monitoring and understanding this 24/7, that's where it's at. And having a true third-party picture. What I challenge every business leader to say is your IT company handing you a document and saying, here, Mrs. CEO, here's where we suck? Ask yourself a question, right? Here are all our security holes. What do you want to do about it? No one's having that conversation with their IT company. I can tell you that right now.
Well, again, I think in maybe 20 years ago, you know, when what McAfee antivirus, anti-Norton, all these, right, when they came out, it was probably okay to let my IT company do that. And that's probably where we got into this mode, right? Is, I bought a computer. Oh, yeah, let me have that $29 McAfee. Let me load it up or whatever. And it was okay then, because I don't think it was near the complexity that it is today. But I think... And I'm guessing, Gary, even the really high-end MSPs, IT companies, they're even telling you, we don't do that. We're not at that level. I'm sure that they don't, because they probably know they have holes, right? And they probably don't even want, a lot of them don't want that liability, is my guess. They're willing to say, oh, no, you need a cybersecurity company, and that kind of transitions that back over to you, too.
Yeah, look, so one of the challenges we have is there's no real definition for cybersecurity. It's not like the definition of cybersecurity tells you to do A, B, C, and D, and you have to do it to have cybersecurity. Anyone can say that we provide cybersecurity, and if the business team doesn't understand the real components of a secure solution, they're like, oh, you're going to sell me cybersecurity? Yeah, $6, no problem. Put that on my computer, we're good to go. Yep, you're good to go, you know, Mrs. CEO. Again, they just don't know, and there's a lack of education as well. So that is absolutely, you know, a huge problem. We see it all the time. And most of the good MSPs will say, look, we can do up to this level of security. Anything above that, you're going to need to bring in a cyber company. And JW, you hear it too, man. We're at many of the same presentations and conferences, and you're hearing more and more of the attorneys saying, look, you got to separate IT from security.
Yeah.
Well, you have two different firms that communicate with you, and you get a true, you know, picture of your risk. And I think that's so important.
Man, if I owned an IT company, that would be one thing I told them. I would make them sign a disclaimer that I don't even handle cybersecurity, right? Like, I don't want that on me from a liability perspective. I think that makes much more sense. And another thing you guys do, I think that's interesting, I know every single team member on our team, almost 1,300 people now, they all go through your training, which we have the phishing scams and many things. People are like, yeah, I know that. But, you know, now you're getting text on your phone that says, hey, we just charged your card. Your DHL package is waiting for you. And you're like, when did I get a DHL package? You know, and click on it. Pay $29, and next thing you know, they've got your credit card information or whatever, right? So I think that the phishing scams are becoming also very complex, and I know that your training is cutting edge, which is helping as a client. I'm assuming as a client, I didn't ask this question. I'm assuming we weren't the only ones who got that for free, but I'm assuming when you are a customer, this training is something you get to go through to help your protect your systems as well.
Yeah, for sure. Look, about 60% of your cyber risk comes from your people, to your point, wow, right? It's the phishing and the spear phishing and the SMS text messaging phishing. voice phone calls, right? And you know what's crushing us right now? But crushing people? AI.
Yeah.
You can go into AI, you can ask ChatGPT, write me a referral letter from a general dentist to an oral surgeon. And you know what? I'll show that letter to oral surgeons. So like, yeah, that's written better than most people can write. You know? And it's spot on. So the days of poor grammar, improperly worded, you know, emails, that's all gone, right? And the ability, like, you can do it now. I mean, it's a little scary. I won't disclose all of it on a public channel, but you can go into these large language model systems, ask them questions, ask them, you know, the names of certain individuals, and maybe even get email addresses. And within 30 seconds, you can create a targeted list of an attack. So the days of having to spend days or weeks and trying to get all of this information, that's all long gone.
So they're not out there randomly trying to target random phone numbers, like you might just randomly dial phone numbers. They're actually getting lists that they can target that are potentially unprotected systems.
For sure, right? And you know, looking for targets of opportunity. Look, some cyber events are truly random. You know, like a couple of weeks ago, SonicWall had a massive security flaw in their firewall software. And anyone that had VPNs turned on, and if it wasn't configured properly, hackers could scan the internet, find the SonicWall VPN connection, attack them. And the SonicWall's like, I don't need a username and password. Come on right in, right? And hackers were getting right through. And like our phones were lighting up like, hey, we got hit with ransomware. We got hit with ransomware. I'm like, all right, do you have a SonicWall? Like, yeah, how'd you know that? It's like, because, you know, that form of ransomware is utilizing that vulnerability. So yeah, look, some of these attacks are truly random, and you know, the hackers can scan millions of IPs over a couple of days, and others are extremely targeted. You know, look what came out from the FBI in May, where hackers were, you know, potentially going to target the oral surgery community with phone-based scams, and in fact, they started executing.
Well, and I think another piece, you and I have had this conversation, but I think it's worth noting, these aren't kids sitting, most of them, they're not kids sitting at their home just randomly doing it. These are big, sophisticated overseas organizations, whether it's in Russia or China or the Middle East or, you know, South America, wherever they're at, it doesn't matter. These are very complex organizations who hire very highly skilled people. It's not some nerdy kid sitting in his basement doing this. Right. These are companies, and they're making millions and millions of dollars from these scams, correct?
Yeah, like, absolutely. You know, if you do a little research, you'll see this as well. Some of these hacking groups are generating $1 billion a year off U.S. businesses. So to your point, JW, they can hire the best hackers, the best developers, you know, people who know everything about cryptography, you know, encryption, cryptocurrency, and they leverage these people to build this code. And then these organizations actually operate as ransomware as a service. So it's a franchise and franchisee operation. So if I'm a criminal and I'm like, dude, I know JW, that dude's shady, he's a great hacker. I'm like, hey, JW, listen, give me 10,000 in Bitcoin. I'm going to give you the most advanced hacking tools. You hack whoever you want, JW. I get 40% of whatever you collect, you get to keep 60 deal, and JW sends me $10,000. I'm like, here's your tool set, go hack whoever you want. That's how these operations are running.
Wow.
So, you know, and that's how they generate so much money. And to your point, they operate in countries like Russia. Russia doesn't care. If this threat group is operating in their country and they're bringing in, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars and spending that money in their country, there's no way Putin's being like, all right, yeah, FBI, you know who my guys are. I'll just send them over, you know, on a plane and you guys can charge them. It's just not happening.
Yeah.
Just be honest. Yeah, you know? So it's,
well,
you know,
a $1 billion to any country is a impactful amount of money, and especially if it's gone out with no cost of goods or services, right? I mean, or some services, but no cost of goods. It's just bringing in $1 million. So yeah, it's complex. And it's extremely, extremely costly. What would you say is the average ransom? I don't want to say ask ransom, but paid ransom when you see this across these, because when they get hacked, let me just also full circle back, because I know the answer to this. When you get hacked, Uncle Gary can't save you if you weren't using his system, right? You can't say, "Ah, don't worry, we can now install Black Talon for you and get you off." It's too late at that point. You're going to have to pay some sort of a ransom, get your systems back, and then you could protect us. What is that average costing nowadays?
Look, no one wants to pay the ransom. Like, you don't want to empower these guys, but I hear a lot of people say, "Oh, never pay the ransom, never pay the ransom." Like, but guys, it's just not realistic. Like, if I'm a practice, if I'm a dental practice, for instance, and I get taken down in a ransomware attack, and the hackers have stolen all my patient data, if they've encrypted my servers and workstations, they've encrypted my backups, and I literally have zero, what option do you have as a healthcare entity? Like, you have to get your patient records back, so you're going to pay the ransom. I'll tell you, most healthcare entities, like a dental practice, even if they're small with 15 computers, you're probably paying six figures for a ransom.
Wow.
And then you have to add in all your operational losses. You haven't had any revenue, cycle for 2 weeks, no payments coming
Is that
in.
about the average time? About 2 weeks down?
Yeah, because they typically hit every single machine and every single server. So your IT company has to come in and rebuild your network. And we all know that these imaging and practice management systems are held together with dental floss and Band-Aids, unless they're coming from the same company. And it's a tough predicament to be in. And I think most practices don't know that. They're like, "Oh, we have a backup." Or my IT guy promised me we snapshot the computers every 15 minutes, so if something happens, we'll just restore it. I'm like, well, that all sounds great until you have to rebuild 20, 30, or if you're a smaller dental group or a DSO, hundreds or thousands of computers. Like, guys, it's just not even realistic. I mean, public information. Look at some of the bigger DSOs that have been hit. Like Fox News, CNN was reporting they were down for 6, 7 weeks sometimes.
Well, I mean, if you want to use simple, 2 weeks. I mean, if you're a even if you're just a an average practice doing $1.5 million a year or something, right? And if that means your revenue is what, maybe 150,000 a month or something, and if you lose 2 weeks, that's 75, 80, $100,000 in revenue, plus you got to pay the ransom. So it gets really, really costly. The other thing you said, and I want to kind of wrap it up with this because I think this is interesting. People always say, "Well, what if I pay them and they don't release my records or change it where I can access my PCs?" You were telling me at one time about the whole what do you call it? The Google list for the dark
Five-star
web,
Google review. Yeah.
5-star Google reviews. Yeah, so they actually get rated, right? If and they get a bad rap, then they know they can't get money.
Yeah, look, I think that's what it comes down to. I remember probably like 2018, 2019, a practice contacted us that got hit with ransom, and we knew the name of the hacking group, and we advised them, like, if you guys pay, you're probably not getting your data back. And that group quickly went out of business. But that is not the norm anymore. Almost all of these groups know that if a victim pays and they don't turn over the keys to unlock all the data, no one will pay them in the future, and they'll actually just go out of business. So, yeah, look, it's mind-boggling. It's sick at so many levels, and I tell a lot of people, like, you got to understand who you're playing with. You are playing with hardened criminals, period.
Wow,
And they will do whatever they can to make sure they get paid, right? They've invested their time to destroy your business, and if you want your business back, you're going to have to follow a procedure in order to get there. And it's like a lot of business leaders, like, "Well, I'm not paying." I'm like, there's no other path forward, guys. Like, you're going to have to pay. Or, hey, you still have a viable backup. Okay, let's see if we can recover the data. Let's see if the hacker stole your data. So in healthcare, the biggest problem right now is almost all hacking groups steal some or all of your patient records, and now you have major, liability, whole other discussion. Yeah, so it's not an easy decision. It's not a good place to be. But I always tell everyone, you just have to try and do the right thing, right? You have to implement preventative measures to prevent these intrusions to begin with. It can't be a hope and a prayer that my firewall and IT company and antivirus software is going to stop, because it just doesn't. I see it, almost on a weekly basis. Everyone's like, "My IT person's the best. He's got 8 monitors on his desk and he watches my network all day long." I'm like,
Well,
what the hell does that even mean?
actually he has a he has the NFL network going, and he's got YouTube on one and something. No, probably not the truth. Well, Gary, this has been super helpful. If somebody wants to get a hold of you or get in contact with you, and I will say, I think you would be surprised. I'm not going to go quoting Gary's prices. I don't know his prices, but I know for what we do, it's very, very reasonable. And you've told me in the past some that, so don't think this is like if you're a single practice, you're going to be spending $5,000 a month. That's just not the case at all. It's not even nothing like that. So a few hundred bucks a month, you're covering yourself. I think you need to consider it. And Gary, if they want to get a hold of you, what blacktownsecurity.com or what's the best way?
Yeah, blacktownsecurity.com. I'm an open book. If you have any questions, Gary at blacktownsecurity.com. That's great. You know, I'm all about education and helping people too. So reach out, whatever you need. Definitely follow me on LinkedIn. I got about 6,000 followers there. We push out a ton of great security tips, both from a personal perspective as well as for your business. So you know, that's a good way to kind of keep on top of what's going on.
Yeah, even if you don't sign up, I think when you're learning some tips about these phishing, these spear phishing. I learned a lot. I went through the whole course. You have to take a test too, so you can't cheat. You can't just listen and then answer. You got to answer questions. I actually failed a module because I got a phone call, so don't do that. That's a bad thing too. You got to go back and restart over again. So, Gary, thanks for jumping on here, and it's always good to see you. And again, if you're not protecting your computers and your systems at your office or at your maybe even personal, shame on you, because it's bad and it's not getting better as well. But Gary, thanks again. Appreciate you jumping on here.
You got it. It's always a pleasure. Thanks, JW.
All right. Everybody have a super day. Follow Gary on LinkedIn and also give him a call, set up a little discovery call, learn more about him. But in the meantime, keep on doing hard stuff. Have a great day.